This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
A new podcast from Amalie Arena in Tampa. We've moved on and hopefully left whatever that was that we were forced to watch last night down in Sunrise behind stop number two for the Canucks on this four-game road trip. We'll be here in Tampa, site of the All-Star game a couple of weeks ago. And if you listen closely to the podcast today, you're going to hear the chants of Besser, Besser in the background. Of course, he was the star here a few weeks back, and the Canucks could use him to be the star in here tomorrow as they take on the top team in hockey for the second time in less than a week. Jeff Patterson of TSN, Jason Botchard of The Province. The podcast, as always, presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, and we talk about the All-Star game. You talk all-stars in the car business, you're looking at Eagle Ridge GM. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, a pre-owned vehicle, start your search online, eagleridgegm.com. If you're one of those people that likes to stroll the showroom, the lot as well, you can find them at 2595 Barnett Highway in Botch. I know how much you love the all-star story.
Are we really still talking about the... I honestly can't do it. I know you want to talk and revisit the excitement of the All-Star game, but once again, I didn't watch it. I'm going to refuse to watch all. I never want to talk about an All-Star game ever.
I know, because you just want to talk about the Eagles, and wow, we will have to get to that. But right there, people can tell, you know, you're not in full voice 100%. You're sort of playing through some pain this week. I don't know if it was Super Bowl fever or if it was just a fever. But I remember last week when we recorded back home in Vancouver, you were a little under the weather. It reached sort of epic proportions on Sunday because I thought we were going to be watching Super Bowl at Drancer's place. We got the invite down in South Florida. I went, you were nowhere to be found.
Well, yeah, I did, as you know, and while you were here with me, I was getting sick last week, and I felt a little bit better, and then I did Matt's show on Friday. I went out that night to the vote to see Portugal the Man, which I probably shouldn't have done. The sickness, like, it doubled down on me. And yeah, it was one of those ones where you take the flight and the congestion sinks into your ears and you feel like you have vertigo. It's hard to breathe. You can't, like, it was really bad. It was awful. Like, people don't warn you enough how brutal it is. One of the worst things about having kids are these viruses that they're carrying. Like, it's evil, evil shit that they're bringing in to your universe, your bubble, regularly. Like, it's scary stuff that I feel not enough, like, I need to tell future parents, like, be careful. You may not want three, because that triples, you know, now you're tripling down on the opportunities you have of them carrying in this virus. So anyways, I didn't want to be sick for this. It was one of the greatest days of my sporting life, right? And I was looking forward to it, as you know, for 2 weeks. And I got landed in Florida, and I had to cancel. And, like, Drance texts me right back. He goes, oh, classic Botchford bailing at the last minute. Like, I honestly never bail because I never make plans. I hate making plans with people. And after Drance chewed me out for, like, you got me to organize a party, then you're cutting on me. I'm not for the next 6 months. I'm not making plans with anyone. I don't want to be the guy. I'm the guy that doesn't go out. I'm the guy that doesn't make plans. I don't make plans with anyone. I just wanted to watch the game with them. That's all. I said, hey, I'm coming. I like you. I'd like to watch that. Like, I was trying to act like a fucking human for once in my life, right? Like, there's this, like, one of the, like, when the sports departments merged and, you know, they're trying to figure out, like, what's this longstanding feud between me and IMAC? I remember IMAC was in with one of the higher-ups, and one of the things he told the higher-ups was, well, When Botchford was first on the beat, he wouldn't go out with me and, like, go out to dinners, and he wouldn't go out with the media. And I don't want to go out with the media. Like, I don't go out with any, like, I don't want to. And this is now the reason why. So Drance is mad and saying that he organized this whole party for me to be at. And I'm like, I just wanted to watch the game. I never asked you to organize a party. In fact, that was the worst case scenario. I just wanted to go out and watch the game with you because I like you and I'm trying to be human. That's all.
So I swoop in because I flew all day Sunday. I got in, I landed in Miami around kickoff time and went straight to, got my rental and straight to Drancer's place. And, you know, at that point, when I got off the flight, I'm getting my messages that you're under the weather and you're not there.
Right.
But I'm racing to get to Drancer's place because I want to see the football game. I'm listening to it on the car radio as I make my way there. It's like, oh, this is a great game. I'm going to get there. I get there at halftime, so I see a little Timberlake, and then I'm there for the entire second half. Now, I said Drancer met me at the door of his place and showed me up, and I was like, who's here? Oh, a couple of staffers from the Panthers, and you know, it's just a few people. So that's great. Go up there, and it's Drancer's wife and a couple of the women that work in the office with him. And in some ways, I was glad you weren't there because it was like so much food. Like, there was more food for me. Like, give me all the food. So one of the women that Drancer works with had made this. And it looked spectacular. It was like this cookie cake. It was like chocolate chip cookies, but in a cake pan. And she's like urging me repeatedly, like, you gotta have some. You have to. You, everybody loves it. You gotta have some. So in a stoppage in the game, I go over to the kitchen and I cut myself a piece of this cookie cake. And it did look good. And I come back to like the TV area and there's silence and everybody's looking at me. And they can't believe the size of the piece of cookie cake I had taken. I didn't think I had overdone it, but all of a sudden, like now I've got this complex. Man. Like I'm just sitting there and they're staring at me because, well, they weren't staring at me. They were staring at the size of the cookie cake.
This is why I don't go out, man. That's awful.
And so I felt like, well, I've taken it. I have to eat it. And then it dawned on me that it was way too big. Like, I took way too much. But at that point, I was past the point of, like, no return. So I wrestled with this thing as the game went on and into the fourth quarter. And there's still part of it on the plate. And I felt bad because she had made it and she had talked it up. And it was good, but I took way too much. And so then I saw her the next day. I went to the Panthers practice facility.
Right.
And because nobody else at the party had taken any, so there was like a huge portion of it left over. So she brings it into the office. She sees me there. And you got to have more. You loved it so much. And I'm saying, I am so full from last night. Like, I'm done. Like, I may not have to eat on this road trip again because of this damn cookie cake. And, like, she's trying to force feed me. Anyways, I saw others in the office. They chowed down, and it was damn good. It was. And so was the football game. And ultimately, even though you weren't there, you were there in spirit, and you get to gloat because your Eagles won.
Yeah, and I've, like, I was... For a good 48 hours, like it felt like I was on drugs. Like I was on like so many demons, sporting demons, this inferiority complex that I've carried as an Eagles fan just left, just vanished. And you could almost see it like, you know, in the movies when you see the soul going up to heaven, like all of these ghosts, losing the Fog Bowl, the Randall Cunningham injuries, McNabb throwing up, Andy Reid's use of timeouts, all the NFC Championship chokes, all of it just released. And I got to tell, like, I was like, it's ridiculous to think now. Like, but at the time, it felt like the biggest epiphany of my life. Like, I'm walking out, like, they've won the game. I've consumed it all. I'm still trying to, like, realize everything that's happened. It's so all settling in. And I walk outside and I'm on the water in Florida and it's warm and I'm like, just got good vibes all around me. And I'm like, I want this for Vancouver. I want this feeling for Canucks fans. Like, that's one of the first things that I can think about. I want everyone to feel this way. Like, you know, so I've come down to being a regular person, but for a good 48 hours, I was not a regular person. Like I was on acid. I was on ecstasy. I don't know. Like it was a feeling that I can't fully describe, but it was amazing. It was all worth it. It was an incredible game. And I'm super, super happy that it went down the way it did.
So in your moment of glory, you're experiencing all this.
Yeah.
And I just want to puke because my stomach is so full of this damn cookie cake. But when you listed off all those symptoms that you were suffering on the flight and the runny nose and the watery eyes and vertigo and everything, like, Botch, I experienced every single one of those for 3 hours last night at BB&T Arena.
Oh, man, that game you're talking about, that was – we're at a pretty bleak moment of the season here. And what really got me was not just watching the game – but talking to some of the guys afterwards and like, okay, what went wrong here? And basically, essentially the message was kind of the same. We didn't play defensive enough. We didn't play simple enough. We didn't dump it in enough. Wasn't enough off the glass and out enough. And I was like, fuck, like this does not sound like the group that I heard at the beginning of the season. And I'm certainly going to ask Travis about this at some point, whether like things have changed, but I'm feeling a lot. I'm getting a lot of those Willy, like I'm getting out of that. You're pulling me out of that Eagles euphoria pretty fucking quickly here. And I'm getting those Willy, you know, post-stress disorders back because that, and it's not the first time in the recent while because the Sabres game was the same. That felt like a Willy game last night. Like that looked like a Willy game. They played like a Willy game. They, once again, they didn't generate. And it was almost like a poor Besser. Like he did, he made a great play at the beginning of the game and he sets up Berchi and Berchi nearly scores. That was probably their best chance of the whole game. But all I can think about now is, damn, why didn't you shoot that puck, man? Like you gotta shoot. Like that's your hope. Like your chance, you know, to give some shining light to some of these games. And I think that I'm convinced that they're going to play better against Tampa. But I do think that there's going to be a lot of games like this down the stretch. Like this is something that we're going to see a lot more of.
Right. And that to me is the biggest concern in all of this is because they're healthy now. You pointed that out in the Provies last night. And it's a point that has to be underscored that, you know, for 6 weeks there, they had the crutch. They were able to lean on, we don't have Horvat. There's no Sutter. Berchi's out. Tanev's gone here as well. Those guys are all back. This is as healthy as this team has been all season long, because, I mean, Edler got hurt in game 3 or 4, and then it's been, you know, a series of injuries from that point. So the first 3 games of the season, I suppose they had, pretty, Gaunce didn't start the year, but they were healthy for those first couple of games. But this is their team. This is it. What you see is what you get. And you're right. Not only transporting us back in time to a dark, dark period of, protecting the one goal deficit. We pounded that storyline into the ground on the podcast a year ago.
Yeah.
And that's what last night looked like. But it wasn't just the Canucks. It was the night itself. It was the atmosphere in that building. And with all due respect to our buddy Drancer, you can't just sweep that under the rug. Like, it's got to be tough. It's got to be tough for these players to, you know, they're conditioned to playing in front of big crowds. They're used to that. There's excitement. There's energy in the building. A Tuesday night when two teams that are geographically as far apart as you can get in the National Hockey League come together for the first time. Like, there was nothing. There was nothing in that game or in that building last night.
No, the crowd felt as thin as I've ever seen a crowd. And I think you actually asked Henrik, like, if that impacted him. And I thought he kind of said it did. Like it, and I agree, it has to have an impact on the players, but you know, they're paid millions of dollars. Like they got to overcome the sparse crowd. I mean, it was bleak. It's bleak to look at an arena like that and see, like, I'm not even going to guess because I know, like, I'll probably get a text from Drance saying I was way wrong, but there were not a lot of people. It was tough to watch. There was zero atmosphere in the place, but the Canucks, they had, and I've said this before, I think on the podcast, I believe it drives Green crazy how soft the Canucks can be at times. And they were soft last night. That was the type of game where, they didn't have the puck a lot. They're getting a lot of shots on that, but it's a close game. Like Markstrom he kept them in it. And they were in a one goal game. That to me is the type of game where a big hit, a big moment, a big play, a big shift, like there's lots of stuff that can flip momentum. They needed one of those things. And, the Sedins weren't able to do it. And I've got my theories on that. I don't think it's helped them at all that they've cycled through the number of wingers that they've cycled through this season. I don't think that they've felt rhythm or chemistry at any point this season with any of these guys. And there's guys like Vertanen. Like, he had chances to hit guys. He had chances to do things physically. And it's not just the hitting. He had chances to win puck battles along the boards, to be physical, to rub guys. Like, and it just wasn't there. And, he's one of the guys. I thought Ben Hutton had opportunities to make plays, and he couldn't make plays. And I was saying to you last night, and you, I think you asked Green about it. Like, I feel like Hutton's in his own head. Like, I feel Hutton was a lot better at the beginning of the year than he is right now. Like, I think that he's in a confidence crisis right now. And I'm not sure, like, I know, like, he's getting a lot of tough love right now, and I'm not sure it's working in the overall. So, well, you pick anyone on that team other than Markstrom, and maybe I'll give you Delzato, and there were guys that had chances to do something, and they did nothing.
There is that element's missing from this hockey club. There's no doubt. And say what you will about Derek Dorsett, but Derek Dorsett was a pro in that sense that he could read those situations and do, he tried at the very least,
right,
to try to spark this team. And I know we sort of, made light of the fight in Los Angeles and whether that turned the tide that night. But again, that's a veteran guy reading a situation at the very least and trying to do something. And there's nobody in this lineup. Like, I think you're being generous when you list a few of those guys, because to me, there just isn't that guy on this roster that can grab this team by the scruff of the neck and get its attention. And maybe Bo Horvat develops into that kind of player with his performance, but Bo Horvat's not going to run around. He's not going to fight. He's not going to run around and throw big hits. That's not his game necessarily.
Right.
But when we talk about future leader, like, it just, yeah, like, I kept waiting for somebody. And Travis Green's talked about, stepping outside your comfort zone. And I think that there's a real truth in that, that somebody on this roster, if they want to make an impression on the coach, there's 29 games remaining. You just can't keep doing what you have been doing because it's not working. And this team is so easy to play against. And it is something that, I get that the game is changing, but it's always going to be a physical game. Like that, there's always going to be an element of physicality in this game. And there are nights where you need a spark. And last night was one of them. And there was no spark top to bottom, save for Jacob Markstrom. But Markstrom, and he's becoming the voice of reason on this hockey club now. Like, it shouldn't be that way after every game, but we're going to him. We're asking him about, like, what did you see out there? What were you doing? What was the team doing? What wasn't it doing? Like, he's the goalie. Like, maybe, he can observe, but he can't do much about it. And yet he's given the most honest answers of anyone by far on this team right now.
Yeah, look how far we've come, eh? Like, at the beginning of the year, I wouldn't even think about talking to him, but you're right. He is providing some insight, because ultimately he's the most honest guy on the team. He's the most, I'm telling you, he's the most honest guy in the organization. Like that shit quote that he gave you, and he was played shitty and the ice was shitty and all that stuff. Like, he doesn't have filters. And when he's on a roll, he can get going. I do think, like, this, it just does not look to me, here we are in February, and it just doesn't look like a Travis Green team. Like, it just, I don't think it is. Like, I don't think that this is the way he wants his team to play. It's certainly not the way that he talked about his team playing when he was hired in May. It's not how he talked about his team playing when he was hired at the beginning of the year. And yet he's got all it, like, all this is the group, right? And the other thing that sticks with me from that one is that, like, the Panthers aren't a good team. Like, this is not some great team, right? But they have two really good young lines with several really good young forwards. They've got a potentially great defenseman, young still, in Ekblad coming up. And they've got prospects. Like, I think they had three in the top 50 on Button's team. And I feel like that there's a significant gap in terms of development, in terms of the rebuild from where the Canucks are now to what it would take for the Canucks to have two good young lines and a really good young defenseman and plus have multiple prospects coming soon. So again, for me, this underscores what has to happen this month. Like, it's just wild to me that we're going through all this and teams like the Rangers are talking about trading off veterans and the Canucks are telling everyone that their priority now is to re-sign Erik Branson, and they're considering re-signing Thomas Vanek. And I just gotta believe that it's just not gonna, like, it just can't happen that way. They need young players. They need young talent. They need more draft picks, because I do like some of the prospects that are coming. I think it's great that they have Elias Pettersson and Gaudette, and Gaudette's going to be here at the end of the year, but not all of them are going to work out. They need volume. They need lots. And you'll see it again against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Like, that's a team with stars, multiple stars, and then insulated by a bunch of really good players. And to get to that level, the Canucks still have a long way to go.
Right. I get a sense in our market that, you know, this idea that there are prospects now, and prospects are great. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, it's almost like a novelty because there haven't been many prospects for the last 5 to 10 years, but every team in the league has prospects, Botch. Like, if it was as simple as having prospects, then the Oilers wouldn't be in the sewer, for the last decade, even with Connor McDavid. You know, the Colorado Avalanche have had all these great young forward prospects, and how did that pan out for them? You know, you have to have the prospects. Those are the building blocks, but, you know, then it's team building too, and you've got to surround them and fill in. And, you know, it's not as simple as just, oh, here's our prospects, let's roll them out, and all of a sudden it's going to, you know, be a successful hockey club. So I'm so with you there. Like, if you use Florida as a measuring stick, they're still 6 points out of the playoffs in the East with a third string goaltender right now. And, you know, they controlled play pretty handily last night against the Vancouver Canucks. So, yeah, no question, there's a ton of work to do. And look, there were some scouts in the building last night from teams that are rumored to be in the market for, you know, adding some offense at the trade deadline. Nashville had a scout there. The Boston Bruins, Winnipeg, I think, was in the building as well last night. If they were there to watch Thomas Vanek, that was not a particularly good. That wasn't the brochure kind of night for Thomas Vanek or the Vancouver Canucks if they're trying to peddle Vanek.
That was the master of meh night for him, not the Tommy gun that we've seen before. And like, it's not like Vanek's one of the guys. And I think it's out there in multiple places that Canucks have taken calls for Ben Hutton. One of the things going around is that there's one team in the Eastern Conference that's hot and heavy for Ben Hutton. You know, immediately I do think of the Florida Panthers because of the ties there and, some of the analytics involved. But he did play. He didn't play well. Vanek didn't play well. And the other guy that, you know, they've definitely been testing the market on, and Anders Nielsen, didn't play. I had the Panthers. I had created this plan recently when I was first talking about Nielsen being on the trade market, of how they could get his save, because he's played 15 games. Like, before you get to 20, a few games can have a big impact on your save percentage. After 20 and above, it kind of gets more locked in and it's harder to change. But a few good Anders Nielsen games could have had a real impact on that, which is at 906 save percentage. I had a plan to try to get it to 920. The Panthers, in fact, were part of the plan, but maybe I was mistaken, because I don't know if they had 40 shots. I think they had 40 shots. Like Markstrom was good. Like, he had a really good game. I'm not sure that they were all the, like, crazy odd man rushes, and I'm not entirely convinced Nielsen couldn't have done similar. But the Canucks were dominated in a way that I didn't quite expect in that game from that offense.
Just back to Vanek for a sec, and there is a story here that is going to require a little bit of research at some point, because people have probably seen or heard that Tommy Vanek now has to wear these Hawaiian shirts the rest of this road trip as a result of a shootout competition at the end of practice on Monday down in Florida. And we saw this with Troy Stetcher ahead of the last long road trip. We've documented the last long road trip. We don't have to get into details there, but it was through wintry, snowy places. And Stetcher lost the shootout and had to wear a turtleneck anytime in public. So to games, on flights, that was the team rule. He had to wear a turtleneck. Well, here they are in Florida. They do the shootout thing the other day at practice, and the loser has to wear Hawaiian shirts the rest of the way.
Right.
And we find out, and we saw him walk into the building yesterday with his suit over a powder blue Hawaiian shirt and the sunglasses on. But the question, like, how the hell does Thomas Vanek lose a shootout competition on a roster that has Tanev and Gudbranson and Brendan Gaunce and Nick Dowd? And like, how does Thomas Vanek finish dead last and have to wear the Hawaiian getup?
The defenseman could not have been involved in this.
But Stetcher lost the last one, so I'm assuming he was.
I find this super hard to believe. Like, unless he was throwing it and he really liked the Hawaiian shirt. It's the only thing. There's no way. Like, Gudbranson? How is, like, Gudbranson? Come on. Has got a shoot-up move that can score a goal. Gudbranson does. I find this, we'll have to get to the bottom of this one, because this is, I'm finding this hard to stomach. Like, either he threw it, someone paid him to throw it, someone paid him off. There's something more. I find it hard to believe that Van, like, he wouldn't he just do like five slappers in a row? One of them would have gone in. No?
Yeah, I think, you know, he might try a couple moves early on, and if it's not happened for him, then you're right. I mean, you'd think, screw it, I'm just going to slap shots here, and eventually something would go in. The other thing I find funny about the shootout competition is, you know, practice ends, they start to get a shovel, and they clear the runway for the shootout. And that's Travis Green's signal to get the hell out of there. Like, the head coach doesn't stick around for the shootout at all. Like, I guess maybe he gets some reports after the fact from Baumgartner or Newell Brown or somebody that is out there still on the ice. But Travis Green wants no part of the shootout stuff.
Yeah, and I remember originally, like, being all, because coaches, this was right from the start. Like, coaches in Vancouver had wanted nothing to do, and all over the NHL wanted nothing to do with shootout. They didn't practice it. It didn't make sense. I was like, if they added this, like, to an NFL, like, there'd be a shootout coach. They'd have three guys. The three guys would have three moves each. They'd be working on it once or twice a week. But I think that even it's over time, it's shown that even players that practice it, even teams that put a lot of time into it, it still ends up being pretty random, you know. So it's I guess not worth his time. So I'm not going to get too ramped up about it anymore. If Green doesn't care about the shootout. I agree. He's got bigger things on his plate, right? He's got to figure out how to save Hutton. He's got to figure out how to save Pouliot. He's got to figure out how to find Louis Erickson, who's disappeared again. And he's got to figure out who's going to play with the Sedins. He hasn't figured that out all year. It's February. He still doesn't know. Like, I'm going to ask him today who he thinks fits best with the Sedins. What do you think his answer is going to be to that?
Well, he'll dance around it and give you they're skilled enough that anybody should be able to play with them. I think if he gives you an answer, it's going to be Louis Erickson.
Yeah, and the problem with Louis, like, one of the first stories, I think it was IMAC, had one of the first stories about, like, he declared he's not a shooter. Like, what? They just gave you $36 million to go out and try to score 30 goals a year to play with the Sedins, who desperately need a shooter, and you declare you've got no shot and you're not a shooter. Like, it's just, like, bananas thinking about it back then. I can't believe. And Louis is, like, it's a gym thing, right? Like, he knows from Boston. He was part of the whole, we got to get him for Seguin thing there with the Boston Bruins. It was a gym signing. It was a gym pick. I just can't. I mean, like, there's all these stories. And I think I've mentioned this before, but there's all these stories about how they wined and dined Luch, and Aquilini was there, and Aquilini was telling him about, like, fights that he got in high school, and how Aquilini beat up bullies, and they told Luch he was going to play with Rodin, and, like, there's wild stories of the meetings that happened back then, and. To wit, I wonder, like, okay, if they had that kind of stuff going on with Luch, did they in turn equally have those kind of same meetings with Erickson, who they gave the Lucic money to? And if they did, like, I'm not sure, like, Erickson has a fully formed personality. Like, I just can't imagine him. I can't imagine sitting down in a meeting with Louis Erickson and trying to fire him up about the team and who he's going to play with. And at the end of it, like, him fired up and you saying, yeah, give him the 36 mil, here, sign right here. Like, I just can't picture that. Like, I picture him saying, I don't really have a shot. I don't really shoot all that much. So I like the way sometimes that he plays. I like the seeing the possession numbers with the Twins. I like seeing, you know, there's a lot of evidence there to suggest that they, you know, can keep their head above water. He just doesn't have a great shot, and those guys need a finisher. That's it.
Do we know? Did Aquilini tell the same stories about beating people up at this meeting to Erickson. Hey, Louis, listen to this. When I was in high school, Louis's like, I'm out of here.
That's all unconfirmed stories, by the way. So that's what I hear.
Maybe he had different stories for Louis. Maybe different playbook. He's got, hey, wait, I got a couple of stories for you. It's unbelievable that, you know, coming to the end of year two and year two just looks so much like year one, and you just know that year three and four are going to look a lot like years one and two.
No, they're not. They're going to be worse. You know that, right? Like, you do realize that, right? Like, this was part of the sell. Do you remember? The first 2 years, you're going to get the, you know, 25 to 30 goal Louis, and then things are going to, you know, level out in years three and four, and years five and six, well, that's the payback for all the success of years one and two. Like, if years one and two are 11 goals and 11 goals, like, I feel like it's going to be 11 goals again. He's at eight, and two of them are empty netters.
Right. So then the question, does he get to 11? There's 29 games to go.
Why not?
I'm not convinced that we know that the big anniversary is coming here at the end of the week. Friday will be one full calendar year since his last power play goal in the National Hockey League. A guy that scored 10 in that final season with Boston. That was probably discussed at the meeting. And he's gone a year, and he's on the second unit. Like, it's not like, you know, I know he's hurt, but I think he's played 52 games in these past 12 months, yeah. And he's on that second unit. And the power play has been productive, yeah. And it's hard to jump all over the power play, but his role within the power play, he's gone a year without scoring a power play goal. Like, that's crazy to me.
I can't even believe that that's true, because that second power play, it's probably constructed better than the first power play unit. They got Vanek, who can make plays. They got Berchi with the shot. I think they have the better defenseman. At least they're better in terms of getting shots on net. And I think that they have better shots than Edler. It's just hard to believe that Vanek hasn't been able, like, Vanek's never set up Erickson for a pound, never a rebound that he's been able to, like, he's supposed to be the garbage man. He's in front of the net collecting all the garbage and putting it in. And, like, it just never happened. Like, I don't know, man. It's that 2016, and it's getting to crunch time for what's going to happen with Jim. And I'm honestly not sure what's going to happen. I know some people think that he's gone. Some people think that he's going to come back for on a 2-year deal. But if it is it will be that 2016 run where they traded for Gudbranson and they signed Louis Erickson. Like, those are the two moves that I'm unable. Like, there's a lot of stuff. Like, I even get Sutter. Like, I understand it. Like, I understand, you know, having the guy to back up there and to help Horvat, you know, kind of grow. Like, I can see the link there. But Erickson, I'm lost on that. And Gudbranson, I'm just, doesn't make sense to me, especially what they gave up.
Pat Cast from Tampa, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. Get huge savings on the largest selections of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Go to eagleridgegm.com for full details. I was pissed at you last night because Marcus Granlund scored for the first time in like 2 months. And, you know, he's offered up in the dressing room post game. And I took the bait. And he is one of the top, he's probably the toughest interview on the Vancouver Canucks, because and some of it's language, but he speaks perfect English. It's just, he's a difficult interview. But I went there and I tried, and I thought maybe there'd be some backup. No, somebody way. Would come with different questions, some help for me. Not so much. So I wanted to ask him, because I thought it was a really dirty play by Dennis Malgin. You know, you're chasing a guy on a breakaway. You can hack him. You can whack him. You can do whatever. But when you go stick between the legs, like, to me, that crosses some sort of line. And I don't know. I had to ask Granlund about it after the fact, and it apparently was no big deal to him. But I thought he might have some sort of funny answer. Foolish me for thinking that. But again, I was looking for backup. There was none to be had. I'm just glad that he didn't punk me post-game the way that Brendan Gaunce did last week.
Oh, wow. Right? We haven't podcasted that, man. That was
imagine if Granlund had done that to me, though. Like, it was bad enough. Like, Gaunce, it was bad enough Gaunce went there. But
what do you think of me now? Oh, man. Did you, so when he, like, when we, when, and I've described it a couple of times now, but, I, you know, we get in there and he's just the center of the room and he's got his chest out and he's right by his locker and he's got this big Brendan Gaunce smiling. And I'm like, I remember all registering. I'm like, that dude is happy. Like, that, oh, this is awesome. He scored some goals. The team beat the Hawks, bitter rival. Like, this is cool. And he could not wait to drop that. Like, it couldn't even, like, the media was still, like, encircling him. And you couldn't even wait for you to have the mic. Your mic wasn't even on. And he just dropped it right on top of you. Were those ones lucky, Jeff? Did it all register at the time?
Well, I laughed at it. And no, in the moment, I was like, really? Like, because I didn't think I had gone that hard on the guy. Like, the San Jose goal is ridiculous. Like, Gabranson almost misses the net from about 5 feet and banks it in off Gaunce. And it wasn't until late in the first period that, like, they reviewed video and determined that, yes, the puck had deflected off Gaunce and was his goal. And that was the one before Christmas that ended the 94-game goal drought.
Okay.
So,
but he was mad at you about the broken stick.
Then, right, so that was a fluky, weird, bizarre goal. And then he followed it up in Columbus with the broken stick one. So they both had kind of been quirky goals. And I didn't think I had made that big a deal about either one of them. In San Jose, we had to talk to him. It had been, you know, almost 2 years since he had scored a goal. Or maybe it had been more than 2 years since he had scored a goal. So, of course, we're going to talk to him there. And then in Columbus, yeah, I was just trying to, you know, I led with, as you pointed out, like, just, hey, not the way you drew it up. But, you know, it worked. And I just kind of wanted to get him speaking about the goal. And clearly, he filed that away in the back pocket and was waiting.
He snapped at you then, yeah. Right? And I thought, oh, he's joking, but he wasn't, like, he's half joking, he's half joking, but I don't know if you, like, I have a theory on all of this, because I did, like, sit down and have, I don't know if you saw, we were talking about, and he started talking with the media, and, like, how, he's like, I'm not being critical of the media, but it's out there, I'm feeling pressure to score, it's out there how long I haven't gone without a goal, and I did see several. And well, you didn't pick out Gaunce, but there were several tweets that you had where you listed guys and how long that they had gone without goals. And I think he saw those tweets. Like, I'm now thinking he saw those tweets, he associated with you, and then when you came with the broken stick question, he said to you, you know, no, that's how you describe it. I'm going to call that a great goal. I'm going to call that a power play goal. And you were like, oh, okay. And he tried to dunk on you there. He missed. And he came back and he did the 360 from the top of the key slam dunk, which credit to him, because it was fun. It was one of those, I said this on Sakaris' show, like, there's some moments where the wall comes down between us and them. And I think that was one of those moments where you're one of the guys. Like, you've chirped him and now he's coming back and he's chirping you.
Your theory is a good one, because I know for a fact that people in his inner circle do follow me.
Oh, really?
On Twitter. Absolutely, I do. Yeah. So you're right. And I don't know if he does. I don't think he does. But it would get back to him pretty directly. That said, karma is a bitch, because, like, you just knew, as you said, from the body language and just the wide eyes and the big smile, like, he knew he had to play his hand that night, because we could be waiting a long time before he scores again. So, yes, he dunked on me that night, but, you know, it may be a while still before we get around to the topic of, you know, his next goal and how does he react then and what kind of circumstances are we even thinking about when it comes to Brendan Gaunce scoring. But look, Brendan Gaunce is kind of the least of the Canucks' concerns right now. As you said, we're just over 2 weeks away from the trade deadline. We have pointed it out. We kind of coined the Tuesday Jim phrase last year on the podcast. In my opinion, the approval rating of this management group has never been higher than the trade deadline of 1 year ago. We know what happened the previous trade deadline with Radim Vrbata, who we had a little visit with in the last couple of days, and Dan Hamhuis. And so, you know, the question now becomes, what's this deadline going to look like? Is it going to be more of the Vrbata-Hamhuis, or is it going to be more of the Burrows-Hanson?
Well, it's been leaning that way for quite a while, and which I can't get. Like, I cannot wrap my head around why anyone in Vancouver wants it to go the Ham Hughes for Badaway. And I see, like, I appreciate the arguments. I appreciate that if the Sedins go, the Canucks need offense. I appreciate that if Gabranson's not there, he does have a role that needs to be filled, like that tough, angry guy that can hit. And I'm not entirely convinced that Gabranson's great in that role, but I do see it's a role and you need snarl in your lineup. Yeah, like I agree with all that. But get the picks. Deal with that shit in the summer. Like, don't worry. There will be guys. There are other guys. Vanek's not the only winger out there who can score. You can find other wingers. There's lots of them. There's a long list on that trade bait. There's like 10 or 12 left wingers that may be available. There's lots of guys on an expiring deals. If he were a center, an offensive-minded center, Henrik was leaving and it was an offensive-minded center that they had, I would more be like, okay, that's harder to find in the summer. But you can find a scoring winger if that's what you need. Get the picks, man. Just get the draft picks. They've drafted well. Like, they've loved all their third round picks. All of them. Every third round pick that they've made under Jim, they've liked. They've nailed some fifth round picks. Three out of the past 6 years looks like they're going to be NHL players. Get more of these picks to give them more opportunities to hit, you know. And I spent a lot of time last night writing about Gaudette and how that was from a trade. That they had picked 144 in the fifth round at number 144. They took Carl Neal. They had another pick that they traded for, and that allowed him to get Gaudette, and he potentially could be a future third line center for a long time. Get more of that. Like, so don't worry about finding the tough guy. You can find lots of tough guys in the summer. I promise you they're going to be there. Don't worry about finding the 34-year-old that can score, maybe not win the possession battle, maybe not be good defensively, but can score some goals and make plays. Like, there are going to be other guys who are out there. I think that the Canucks, like, the only focus that they should have, collect picks, collect young players if that's the way you want to go. I'd rather Hansen went for a pick rather than Goldobin. I really don't see how Goldobin's going to fit and play for Travis Green. I like Judd Brackett. I trust in Judd Brackett. Trust in Judd. Give more picks to Judd. It's fucking killed it at the 2017 draft. The group did. Get that group more picks, man. You just had a lot of success at the 2017 draft. Elias Pettersson has just made Craig Button's number one. Give those guys more ammunition and more bullets.
Am I going to have to get you a little button for your lapel? Like, trust in Judd. In Judd we trust. I can't speak for an entire fan base, but look, in recent years, I think the end of the line for Mike Gillis, where we saw people protesting outside of Rogers Arena and chants in the building, you know, that kind of signaled the end for him, and there was unrest in the fan base. The trade deadline, the Ham Hughes Verbata, like, people were upset. Down the stretch last year, the end of the line for Willie D, again, people were getting a little angry about what was going on around this hockey team.
Yeah.
If they re-sign Eric Gudbranson, I think we see a new level of, I don't know if disdain might be too strong a word, but like, if they think that, and I say they, the ownership group, the hockey club as a whole, like, if they think people have been upset before, if they commit big money and term to Eric Gudbranson, I think the backlash goes to another level.
Yeah, I think if he gets the 4 years and the $14 to $16 million range, which to me is rock bottom of what he, like, an agent would advise him to sign for, yeah, people are going to be, because they know what it means. They know it means 4 years of this, not being, you know, really struggling to move the puck, and there are better options, and, you know, it doesn't make any sense. And plus, the value that you can get back for him, you know, in terms of a pick or a young player that you're also missing out on. So I agree. I think that it's just not good. It's not a tenable. I don't think it's a great situation for them optics wise. I think if you spend some time and you rationally think about it, I think you come to the conclusion that the right move is to trade these veterans for whatever you can get and, you know, rely on the guys that you like. And if you don't like Ben Hutton, then trade him and try to rebuild the defense that way. But Gudbranson should be a no-brainer.
And you made the point, and it's a good one and worth repeating if people didn't see it in the Provies, but everybody reads the Provies. You know, we talk about Hutton and Pouliot and Delzato's under contract and Edler. He's not going to wave. These guys right now, they're all in the mix. And then you've got Ole Ulevi, who's on his way and sort of has to be here next year. And so all of a sudden, that left side, there's a logjam there. So, you know, if you start to look at the bigger picture, in some ways, it would certainly make sense to try to free up a spot on the left side ahead of this trade deadline.
Well, you look at the evidence, right? And there have been many times this year where, unprovoked, Travis Green has said, I really like righty-lefty matchup. Like, he has emphasized that more than any coach I've ever seen before or heard before, especially in Vancouver. He likes to have the righty-lefty matchup. We know he likes Delzato. He's had the full-throated defenses of Delzato, and whether it's how hard Delzato works or how much he hits during the game, whatever it is, he loves the guy. We found out how much he loves Alex Edler because he put Alex Edler out last night or yesterday. He said, like, this is a pro's pro. Like, this is the one guy I never have to worry about. I always know he's doing the right thing. Like, he loves Alex Edler. There's two left side guys. Then you're left with Pouliot, and you're left with Hutton, which takes you to four, and you got Ulevi coming. Now, part of the logic in keeping Chris Tanev is that they want Chris Tanev to play with Ole Ulevi, which makes sense to me. Like, that's one of the ones where I'm like, Chris, trade Tanev. It makes all the sense in the world. And then someone says, well, what if they want, you know, Tanev playing with Ulevi? Well, okay, actually, that is a good counterpoint. So now we're at five left side D. The organization isn't big enough for the long run, for the next couple of years, to have Pouliot and Hutton both in it.
And we have remarked a number of times throughout this season at things Travis Green has said, and we kind of, you know, wonder, you know, where is he coming from? What's his angle? But you and I were both, like, taken aback down in South Florida when he offered up Edler as his shining example of what it means to be a pro, because for how many years have we, look, we know what the Twins mean, but when everybody points to, you know, their preseason testing and their fitness and, you know, nobody is more prepared, like, that's just been the stock answer in the Canuck organization for 15 years. So all of a sudden, now this coach is offering up Alex Edler, has, like, moved past the Twins on this depth chart of being a pro. Like, I was kind of shocked.
Yeah, I had never, like, Torts, AV, Willie, like, I don't think those guys would even think about saying Alex Edler in a situation like that. But you're right. Alex Edler is now top of the list, the pro's pro, who, I guess, like, now that they would have to consider, he's got one more year left, the pitch would be re-sign the 30-something-year-old Alex Edler to be a mentor. The Twins are gone. The guys need, you know, who's going to show them how to act on and off the ice? Who's going to show the players how to be a pro's pro? Well, it's going to be Alex Edler now. No, I was stunned by that one.
I mean, we're locked on to what this organization does, and I can't speak to what happens around the league, but, like, do you think other teams talk about the need for mentorship?
Yeah,
as much as
Verbata was talking about yesterday, he was like saying, like, when he came up and, like, he was rooming with Sakic, and he said just watching Sakic was, you know, how a superstar like that handled himself. It had this amazing impact on him as a rookie, and it can be tough for rookies. Like, the coaches tell them confusing things, and they want them to play in confusing ways, and sometimes they need someone to talk to. But at the same time, like, they do say that. I tend to think it's a little bit overrated. Like, I think that if you talk to some of the younger players on the Canucks, for instance, like Troy Stetcher, Brock Besser, Jake Virtanen, they're not going to the Sedins and saying, like, you know, coach chewed me out for this. Like, what should I think, or what should I do, or what's next for me, or this happened in a game. I think if they're talking to guys, they're probably talking to Bo Horvat. Like, that's the bridge. I 37 to 20, it's a really big bridge to climb to communicate on their level. I think it can be hard, and I think those guys are more comfortable talking to other guys in their 20s.
I also thought it was interesting that Verbata said, you know, when he came into the league, it was all old guys with two young guys on every team, and now it's all young guys with two old players, and he's absolutely right about that. And so, you know, this game has changed, and I also think, too, you know, we see it in all sports, but, like, these young guys, like Brock Besser, you know, he came from a winning championship team at North Dakota. He played in the World Junior. Like, they've all played, you know, Horvat's the same deal. Like, all these high picks, you know, programs of excellence. And, like, I just think they, like, at an earlier age, the stakes are higher. Like, they understand leadership and motivation and those types of things that, you know, I don't know. Like, of course, you're always going to have veterans on every team. I mean, the Tampa Lightning, the top team in the league, they got Chris Kunitz. They went and they brought Dan Girardi. Like, there's always going to be veterans on every team. But you look at what the Colorado Avalanche did and absolutely whacked, like, anybody that was over the age of 30. And look at where they are now. They're a faster team. They're way more dynamic. And, again, like, they're young guys. Landeskog's their captain. MacKinnon wears an A. Like, they've turned that team over to young players, and it's paying off for them.
Yeah, and we'll see how long that lasts and if they can hold it up. But I think you could make the case that younger players could know more about sports science, could know more about modern techniques, probably had shooting coaches way earlier in their careers, probably had puck skills coaches way earlier in their careers. Like, I'm not saying that they know more about playing hockey, but certainly you can make the case that they know more about nutrition and know more about working out, know more about, you know, modern techniques and training than a lot of the older guys. So maybe the young guys should be. Maybe Besser should be mentoring all these fucking guys on how to shoot. Like, he should be holding a hockey school every Saturday morning where Henrik has to show up. Like, forget Henrik. Like, why aren't we talking? Like, why isn't Besser mentoring? If Henrik Sedin, like, if he really wants to work so hard, he should spend like 2 hours a week with Brock Besser, like, learning how to shoot. You can't tell me. You cannot tell me that if he did it like my girls go to dance class, like, if he did his 1 hour once a week with Brock Besser in class, Brock Besser taught Henrik how to shoot, you cannot tell me at the end of the month that Henrik does not have he'll have a better shot. You know that, right?
Well,
you would.
Will he have a goal?
I don't know. I can't believe he scored 15 last year. He's only got 2 this year. His shooting percentage is 4%. It feels like his shot is getting worse. Like, he's forgetting how to shoot. I'm not sure. Like, I think players, like, a lot of older players think sometimes, I'm not saying this, he thinks he's got it all figured out, but certainly when it comes to the Sedins, they would think, I've got puck skills. Like, you know, we're Art Ross champions. Like, I don't want to work on puck skills. I got to ride bikes and climb mountains and work on my fitness and make sure I'm not injured. I'm 37. I got to worry about my body. I would suggest to you, I bet working on a shot is at the bottom of the list. And have you ever talked to Besser about shooting? Like, he knows a ton about shooting. Like, that guy, he will tell you exactly where he was trying. Did we talk about this in the podcast? I think we did, where Berchi was like, yeah, I was just trying to shoot it over the goalie's shoulder. Besser would go into the science of which part of the blade he was using and which part of the 4-inch by 4-inch slot in the net he was aiming at. Like, I am convinced he could teach the Sedins a ton about shooting. Besser needs to mentor the Twins if they're coming back next year.
Yeah, and it's coming back to me now. I hear Besser fared all right at the skills accuracy thing in this building. Now you have my attention. Because I'm envisioning, like, I would pay money to come and watch school in session where the Twins are schooled by Edler on how to be a pro. Like, they get a refresher, sort of. Like, so what it means to be a pro. And then Edler turns them over to Besser for shooting class. And they...
it's like relearning your license or, if you forgot how to properly do a reverse sear on a steak, like, if there's some kind of cooking method that you forgot how to do, like, sometimes you just need to freshen up, right? So some things the Sedins just need to freshen up on. But the shot work, like, they need a lot of work on the shot. Like, that's not just a freshen up. There's going to be a midterm on that one. There's going to be a finals worth 90% at the end of the month on that one.
I think this is an idea worth running with. We may have to work on making this happen because I do I want to see it take place now. Out on the ice after practice or after the season maybe. You know, maybe Henrik goes to Minnesota for a week in the summer. He lives, moves in with the Bessers. Canucks TV can document the whole thing. Like, I would watch that in a heartbeat. That's the podcast for this week from Tampa. Road trip continues. The Canucks and the Lightning. Then into Raleigh to take on the Carolina Hurricanes, and they finish up in Dallas on Sunday. The podcast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center where everyone is a part of their hockey family. We thank you so much for taking some time to listen to the podcast. I would appreciate you sharing it on your social channels to help us spread the word. We'll be back to do it again a week from now when the Canucks are back. Home from the road trip. We'll catch up with Botch next week at Rogers Arena. That's going to do it for us here from Tampa on Province Radio.